And I thought maybe that's the best way to go during this next, actually 40 minutes, is go with questions. Does that sound all right? The first question we had is what about home schools, or how long do you keep your children out of school to teach? Now this is a obviously a subjective answer. I can't give you something from the scripture on it. But I can say that the home is always more important than the Sunday school. The home is always more important than the school. And if there's ever any doubt, I would give the vote to the home, especially if the home is the kind of home we were talking about. If the home is very secure, then the child can go away to school. Actually, the same thing that makes it good to keep the child home is the same thing that allows the child to go to school. If the child isn't ready to go to school for whatever reason, I would keep them out another year. There is at least one of our children that we probably should have kept out of school at least one more year. The trauma was too much. I should have been kept out of school one more year. I completely panicked in kindergarten, flunked half the first grade. They had half grades in Omaha. You get an A and B. And flunked half the third grade. I just wasn't ready for school. I got ready for school about the fifth grade. And they opened a little country school just for the Wilson family. And my older brother was in high school. He had skipped a half a grade in the third grade, another half a grade in the sixth grade, and I'd flunked a half a grade in each of those two times, so the 2 years difference in age and 4 years difference in school. So he was in the ninth grade, and I was in the fifth. And they opened the school, and they had one other little girl and two of my younger brothers and myself out in the plains of Nebraska. And the school teacher was an 18-year-old girl who had 1 year at the normal school at Fremont. And I spoke to her and told her my problem, that there was 4 years difference in school between my brother and me. And she said, there's nobody between you and the eighth grade. And if you learn it, I'll teach it. And she's 18 years old, and she taught me 2 years worth in 1 year, and taught my younger brother 2 years worth in 1 year, and passed me from the fifth grade to the seventh grade. I went to another school, and I was way ahead of the rest of the class. All right, now, but that wasn't the way it was when, so with different children, I think it should not be a standard thing. My older brother was obviously ready. I was obviously not. Sometimes it may be sickness. In my case, I was sick with all kinds of contagious diseases until I was three. I didn't learn to speak until I was three or three and a half, something like that, pretty close to four before I started talking. So it may be dependent upon the state of the child. And I say, I think that at least one of our children we should have kept home for another year.
How would you know?
Well, we just weren't paying as much attention as we should have. But in the spring of that year, we found out how terrified the child was, or in school. But we didn't find it out because we just assumed everybody went to school at such and such an age, and we shipped them off. And I would say just pay more attention. We have some people who would take an absolute view that they should be home until the third grade or the fourth grade, or I think Glenn and Michelle Edwards had that view. He used to be the manager here at the store. They're in Spokane with several children. I think they've come to the conviction that they should keep their children out and teach them at home. I don't object to that. I think I would normally think it would be you should be more flexible. But I would say the home is more important than the school. We have friends back in Princeton, New Jersey, who had the bookstore there, and she was a kindergarten teacher. And she came to the conclusion that a home school was better. And she said, that's a major switch for me, because I'm a kindergarten teacher. But they'll be keeping their children out. I wouldn't be apologetic if you kept your children out longer. That means, so if you're going to keep them out, give them the time. Don't just let them run around. Marion, you had a question.
I just asked if the father dies in a family, if God gives additional grace to the Christian mother to raise them.
Oh, I believe so. Grace and wisdom. But apparently not so with divorce. There's a major difference in a death in the family and a divorce in the family.
See, you've blown some of these things that, from my perspective, do you just pray for the child that's been left out?
That's not just, but of course you do that. Even though it's after the fact, and the expression of affection will have to be different, I would begin to express it in every way you can, in a positive way, not an apologetic way, but in a very positive way. Give very much, even if it's late. Now, we're talking about relationships to parents, and we tell the people this age to pour it on their parents. Not only because parents need it, but because it comes back. When you start giving, it comes back to you, and you need it. Well, if I'm talking to parents, I'd say, give it to them in the kind of ways that you should have given it before. Even if it's embarrassing to this adult man, this adult woman, even if it's difficult for you to do it because you just never did it in terms of a lot of hugs, saying appreciative things, correspondence, even if it doesn't get answered one way, and not just the normal kind of correspondence that you, but heavy correspondence. Even if they wonder what's happening, that's what you want them to do. I wonder what's happening. Yes.
God giving grace in the case where one spouse dies, but not apparently not so in the case of divorce. It would seem to me that, I mean, I don't believe in divorce or anything like that, but there are cases where divorce does happen in Christian homes.
Yes.
And it doesn't seem to me that God would say, okay, I'm not
going to. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way. Yes, God has grace for everybody for every need. The difference is that in most cases, both people are responsible for the divorce in some way. And the person who's the most righteous in the divorce has a temptation to think that he or she was all the way righteous, which keeps repentance from occurring, which hinders the grace. It's not that God doesn't give grace, but grace comes sometimes conditionally based upon some admission of wrong, which if a death in the family, that admission doesn't have to be made and grace is more easily received. But if you have to admit that you were wrong when the other person was so obviously wrong, it's something people don't do. So what I really meant is they don't get grace, not because God doesn't give grace, but they don't get it. We can go to some other subject. Okay, no more questions on this. Yes, Gordy.
I probably know what the answer is, but I guess just want your comments on like Christian schools. Because I know where I'm from in Seattle, they've had a lot of levies failing and sending kids to Christian schools. Do you see any big differences in Christian schools versus public schools?
I certainly wouldn't make a statement just on Christian schools versus public schools. I think a lot of Christian schools are just awful. And I'd send the kids to public school much faster than I would to a legalistic Christian school. In other words, we may not like what is called atheistic humanism, but I don't think the Lord endorsed legalism anymore. In fact, he really hit it hard. So I would take a hard, close look at any Christian school. Doug took part of the leadership in getting that Logos started, school started. I think it's an outstanding school. And I'm very glad the children are there, and I think it's only going to get better. And I'm very impressed, both in the Christianity and in the education. However, we sent our children to a non-graded public school. Non-graded. If you got halfway through the first grade reader, you picked up halfway through the first reader. If you got through 2.5 readers, you picked up 2.5 readers. So no such thing as grades. When you got through 6 years, they just widened what you were learning, not lengthened it. So it was a good school. When we moved with the intention of staying in that school district. So we were watching out for our children's school, but only to find out, after we'd been there for a while, that we were actually closer to a black school. We were 6 blocks from this non-graded school, and one long block, but there's woods between us and the black school. We didn't even know it was there. And the time came to integrate. So when the black school was to be integrated, most of the white people sent their kids to private schools or Christian schools. So Heather went to the black school. She's in the fifth grade. She's one of 2 white girls in the fifth grade, and the only white girl in the sixth grade. The other schools in the county had no kindergartens, but the black school had, because it was a Title B endorsed kindergarten, a federally funded kindergarten to take kids who weren't prepared for school, which is in the ghetto neighborhood. So we thought Gordon was ready for kindergarten, and the others didn't have kindergarten. So we applied for this Title B, and we didn't think he'd pass because he was obviously ready for school, and this is for people who weren't ready for school. However, it was a federally funded program, and he couldn't get federal funds unless it was integrated. So they used Gordon to integrate the integrate the kindergarten. And he came home with a funny face, a funny look. He said, "Dad, there's only one other kid with a face like mine." So in a very real way, our 2 youngest are much more colorblind than our 2 oldest. We thought that it would be good. I got active in the PTA. But in some cases, it backfired. Martin Luther King was killed at that time, and they all accused Heather of shooting Dr. King. And she, you know, she took a lot of persecution. Not just because of the kids, but there are some other things that happened. That for many years, the Negro Elks Club had been giving a $25 savings bond to the kid who had the best English in the school. And guess who won it? And it was just awful. And she would, they're all black teachers and all black students. And the teacher would say to the kids and chew them out, "Why can't you be like Heather?" Well, and it was just, you know, bad. She's a favorite of the principal. She's a favorite of the music teacher. And the principal had what we'd call a black gate, a Negro gate. And he'd walk down the aisles with a real swing to him, and Heather would see him come down the aisle in the fifth grade and imitate him. Yes. And it looked real funny with this fifth grade girl imitating his black principal. Where she got a lot of noise, but it's the best thing. The security in the home made the difference in the schools. So, I mentioned earlier, you want to have the children prepared to go into the world. If the Christian school will prepare them to go into the world, send them to the Christian school. If the Christian school will not prepare them to go into the world, don't send them to the Christian school. You want them to grow up, okay, when both boys wanted to go into the Navy, or right out of high school, I spent 11 years in the Navy. I'd seen many, many kids go down the drain from, well, do I want my boys to get into all the sin that happens to all these 18-year-olds that go in the Navy? And I, no, I didn't. But I thought, well, if they're not ready, you know, are they going to go? And I was willing for them to go, confident that they weren't going to go down the drain. So the object is to prepare people for the world, to be a light in the world, to be a witness in the world. If Christian school would do it, send them to a Christian school. If you had a choice between sending your children to a Christian elementary school and a Christian college, I'd send them to an elementary school, like right now, if that was your choice. They ought to be able to be a witness by the time they get to university. Now, there may be other reasons to go to a Christian college, a lot of other reasons, but if that were just the issue, elementary teaching or college, I'd choose the elementary teaching. Do not send your children to a Christian school as a substitute to get at school what you're not giving them at home. Do not use a school to do something you should be doing.
When do you like give the child a choice when to go to school? Say, like, if I was living in Pullman and had kids that were getting ready to go to elementary school, and I wanted to send them over to Moscow to go to Lobos school, would I give them the choice to go over there? Or if they want to go with their
You mean if they're in first grade, you mean?
Yeah, or like what age does that, do you give them that choice? Or, you know,
I would begin to give them those kind of choices about the sixth grade, before they got to junior high. Now, if I really thought they ought to make a certain choice, I'd load this. You know, I'd stack the deck to help them make a right one, but I'd start giving them to them about the sixth grade. That wouldn't mean that they had the final decision, but it meant that they'd have a major input into it. The reason I say sixth grade, when you begin to get flack, is generally junior high school. And if you can preempt it, anticipate it, by a year, I would think that would be, but it would be different with each child. That doesn't mean they'd get absolute freedom. Same thing with going to church or Sunday school. Let's suppose you are in the best church in town, soundest church, Christian church, loving church, and the thing to do is you go to Sunday school, you're in adult class, the kids are in Sunday school. And next thing you say, Dad, do I have to go to Sunday school? So yes, the family goes to Sunday school, we go to Sunday school. But your assumption is they're learning something in Sunday school. They may not be. One day, Douglas was probably 6 years old. He said, Dad, it was Sunday morning. He said, I wish it was Monday. I said, why do you wish it was Monday? He said, so I can go to school. I said, you get to go to Sunday school this morning. He said, I'd rather go to school. I said, why would you rather go to school? He said, school's hard and you learn something. Sunday school's easy and you don't learn anything. He told me that when he's 6 years old. Okay, now why do I send him to someplace he doesn't learn anything? One time, I think it was in Vacation Bible School, and there were two teachers there, and they're teaching Gideon. And the teacher said that Gideon put out a fleece, and he prayed that it would be wet on the top and dry on the bottom. And Douglas said, that doesn't sound right. So he opened his Bible to Judges 6 and corrected the teacher and read it to the teacher. Was so embarrassed the co-teacher, there are two women teaching, and so embarrassed the co-teacher for this little kid correcting the teacher that she rebuked him, chewed him out for this impertinence. Well, I'm not saying he wasn't impertinent, he could well have been. But that sort of thing doesn't encourage people wanting to go to Sunday school. Okay, there's another thing. One day in church, we were in a solid church in Annapolis, Maryland, and I was listening, and it was the boringest message I'd ever heard. I won't say it was false, it was just I was concentrating with everything I had and there just wasn't anything coming out. And this guy was a dear godly man, but he just couldn't preach or teach. And I began to feel guilty making my children go to Sunday school, go to church. I felt guilty bringing them to church. They're not stupid. You know, here I'm doing everything I can to learn something and I'm not learning a thing. What are they going to think? Well, Gordon wasn't born yet, so Douglas was probably 7. And he was on my right, Evan was on my left, and Bessie and then Heather, all lined up in the pew. Here we are, nice Christian family in a nice Christian church on Sunday morning, and here I'm feeling guilty about bringing my children to listen to this stuff. So just at the height of this guilty feeling, I thought, I wonder how Doug's taken this. So I turned and looked at him, and he had one of these fat pencils that you get in the... And he had a an American Bible Society New Testament for old people. It was King James. It was the New Testament. It was bigger than this, so it was primer print. Big, very big. So you could read his King James New Testament. And he was printing in the back of his Bible in block letters. I said, Doug, what are you doing? He said, I'm copying out favorite verses in the back of my Bible. Has he got an extra pencil? Right. Okay. Now, the thing is, if it's not worth going to, don't make them go. All you're doing is turning people off from God if they're not gaining anything, or come up with a better church or a better substitute. So we got to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Heather was in junior, Heather and Evan were in junior high, Doug was in high school. We said, kids, we're going to shop around. You get to pick the church. Your mother and I will go with your vote. Now, we weren't going to shop around liberal churches, but we would go to believing churches, and they picked the best church in town. It was just good. Consequently, they wanted to go. But if sometimes they said, Dad, do I have to go? I'm losing more by saying yes than I am by saying no. So sometimes I'd say yes, but I wasn't opposed to saying no, you don't have to go. We don't, these people are these children that you have are intelligent, growing, thinking children coming up with their own decisions all the time. And they just realize, up to a certain age, they just don't get a vote. And they, if they're smart, they keep quiet. But when they get old enough, then they make their own decisions. And if you have blocked them in, they're just liable to do the opposite when they can. And if you don't fence them in, they will keep open the options of doing the things that you do. I think of the kids that weren't allowed to grow their hair, and almost all of them went bad. Was it on the hair? Partly, but it was mostly on the unbendableness of parents and the desire of the children to conform to the world. One of the reasons that Young Life is so successful is that they know how to open up children who've been turned off from church. They're gifted in that. But it's based upon reaching people who've been turned off from church. That's how they adapt. But if people haven't been turned off from church, they go to Young Life and say, this is ridiculous. And we were trying to support Young Life in high school when Doug and Evan were in high school, and they looked down on Young Life. They thought Young Life was compromising, not realizing that Young Life was trying to pick up the pieces from rebellious kids. But if you didn't lose your kids, it looked to them that Young Life was compromising. The culture, the church culture, will try to pressure you into a mold. Don't let it do it to you. You follow God regardless what the church is telling you is right. Most churches, especially sound evangelical churches, will teach you that you should have a strong loyalty to the church. You don't find it in the book? When they mean a strong loyalty to the church, they mean to their particular church. And they teach it, and they can make you feel guilty if you're not conforming. Don't buy into that. Your obedience is to God through Jesus Christ, and loyalty will be a peer pressure that will affect you and consequently affect your children, and it's like a straitjacket. You choose to obey God, and you may still choose to be in this church. It's the best church in town, but only go along with them if they're biblical. So retain your independence. We had an outreach during the week to children. When I said I'm going to say, I'm not necessarily anti, I'm just different from some of the... Bessie had an elementary school Bible study group for many years. It was not a child evangelism group. Probably the main difference is that child evangelism, we were not for that, but we were for strong Bible teaching and singing. So these little kids all had their own maps of the Mediterranean area, and they charted the Apostle Paul's journeys. Bessie taught them a lot, inductive Bible study, and singing and other stories. And she had about 20 kids. When Doug got to junior high, she said, Jim, I can't have a junior high study in an elementary school. You better start a junior high study. I didn't know anything about junior high kids. I didn't think I could communicate to them. But I knew it was right, so I took Wednesday afternoon and recruited some junior high kids and had it for about 3 years and ended up with about 20 kids. I thought, well, so I don't know what to do with these kids, but what do junior high kids like to do? Well, mess around. Okay, so we'll have 30 minutes of messing around. That'll be part of the program. 30 minutes of buck, keep away, frisbee, touch football, 30 wild minutes to just run them ragged. What else do they like to do? Eat. So we fed them for 30 minutes. So we killed a whole hour after school, fooling around and eating. And then we had an hour of Bible study. And I taught them how to study the Bible without a teacher, looking for what the text said, just like you do with university students. And we went through several books, and I said, what do you want to study? They said, Revelation. I said, all right, we'll study Revelation. I broke them into three groups. We had about 20 kids. And told them how to study the book of Revelation. I said, you don't spend any time figuring out what it means. You only find out what it says. Go. And I went upstairs and read a magazine, and those three groups studied the book of Revelation. Junior high kids. I didn't teach it to them. I said, stay away from speculation. Just find out what it says. To my knowledge, all 20 kids are going on with the Lord. One little black kid was brilliant. Later I understood, got a scholarship at MIT, became an engineer, and then I haven't seen him since he's in junior high, but I heard a few years ago that he'd quit engineering and had gone to Gordon Conwell Seminary. Last time I saw him was in the seventh grade. So, we did this when the boys were in junior high. We moved to Ann Arbor. I insisted on teaching the high school Sunday school class. Billy Graham came to town. I was in charge, but no, he didn't come to town. The movie came to town. I was in charge of teaching evangelism. So I took my high school class and taught him evangelism. And put him through that. And had my high school class counselors. The same with Heather got to junior high. I insisted on having the junior high youth group. When Gordon came, got to junior high out here, I started junior high Bible study in Moscow. If there's a time you're going to lose, if there is a time you're going to lose kids, it's junior high. Teach them to do things. Okay, when we had the Billy Graham film, these high school kids were leading kids to Christ. I had the Billy Graham film in Moscow. I did it again. And Heather was in high school. Heather was in high school, and I was in charge of giving the invitation at the theater. And she said, Dad, she said, give me a little girl. Put aside a little girl that needs to be led to Christ, and I'll be glad to do the counseling, but don't give me anybody else but a little girl. Heather was 16, I think. And there weren't any little girls. No little girls came forward. So I looked around, didn't see any, but Heather saw this tall girl with long, straight black hair hanging down her back. So she went up to witness to her, and it was a Cheyenne Indian male. It was a girl. And she said, I don't want anybody but a little girl. But she, first person she led to Christ was this Cheyenne Indian, this long straight black hair down his back. I thought it was a girl. Take the time with your children. The busiest time in the bookstores are Journey Saturdays. We had a bookstore. But that's also when the kids were free, Saturday. Okay, what's more important? All the customers come to the bookstore or the kids? I took every Saturday for many years teaching itty bitty league softball, bitty league softball, hot stove league basketball. And I didn't know anything about these things, but I just knew more than they did. And we taught them to pray, and we taught them to a lot of things. Just make them the priority. Okay, now it makes it sound like just by giving these examples, I did everything right, and I just didn't. A lot of things caught up with me. But I spent my time thinking and praying in advance. And sometimes I understood things before I did them. And I'd put off doing what I knew I ought to do. And it's just my fault. It's my fault even if I didn't know what I was supposed to do. Because I'm paid for being a father. It's my job to know. There's nothing more important. Making a living is not as important. Paying the bills is not as important. And I'm not saying it's not important, I'm just saying it's not as important. You know, have your priorities straight.